This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand, and welcome to what is going to be the last Turn the Page for a little while. I've gone and looked at all the calendars and everything. I said, oh, I can be back for the 21st. 21st is a holiday, so you're not going to hear from me until the 28th of April. So it's a month, isn't it? I'm sure you'll manage. So today I'm going to go through three stories relating to America, because that's where I'm heading, and music as well. Straight into it. He was praised as a brilliant musician everywhere he went, and in April of 1962, Marsden got the opportunity to hear him perform. Kenneth Goodman was the grandson of a slave and the son of a coal wagon driver, and rose to become an internationally recognised musician. At the age of five, his parents took him to a church in his hometown of Philadelphia. Young Kenneth was immediately taken by the organ. It was so emotional, and music without emotion is dead, he said of the experience. Being the youngest of seven children and not being in a particularly wealthy family, Kenneth did not get the chance to be taught how to play the organ. Instead, he sat behind the keys and taught himself to play by ear. At the age of 12, he got a job sweeping porches to pay the 25 cents for organ lessons. He started playing at the local church and then caught the attention of a wealthy doctor who decided this very talented boy deserved a chance to become great. The doctor funded Kenneth to have lessons at the Juilliard School of Music in New York. He later won a fellowship to study in Paris under Marcel Dupuis, a famed organist and composer. While studying in Paris, Kenneth started playing shows. He performed for Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, the Duke and Duchess of Marlborough at Blenheim Palace in England, and to physician, musicologist, humanitarian and philosopher Albert Schweitzer in his home in Germany. Schweitzer encouraged Kenneth to continue what he was doing, but not to compromise on who he was. Many will not understand your genius. They will expect you to do things a European does. You have not only mastered the order and mechanics of Europe, you do not stop here. Kenneth continued to play shows around Europe, and his name became well known in the region. In 1962, he ventured out of Europe and began a tour of the deep, deep south, his first venture below the equator, which brought him to New Zealand. His tour began in January, and he performed all over in country halls, schools, and churches. On April 1st, he played the Presbyterian Church in Marsden. The following day, he was scheduled to perform in the town hall. The reception he received was very warm and welcoming, and the organist was very appreciative of this. "There is something very special about New Zealand," he said. On the night of April 2nd, Kenneth walked out onto the stage and was greeted with applause from the audience. Flashing a smile at them, he began to play. The first half of his show comprised of classical organ compositions, Overture and Bach's Cantata No. 29, François Couperin's Suer Monique, and the B-flat major organ concerto by Handel were some of the featured pieces. While Kenneth was a brilliant pipe organ player, on this tour he was playing the electric organ, due to simple logistics. An electric organ is much smaller and easier to transport. During the break, the audiences made requests to him, and during the second half he obliged by playing some of them. He also gave a demonstration of his improvisational skills, playing a series of melodies in a continuous performance. There was no rest for Kenneth on this tour. After finishing in Marsden, he went on to give a series of shows in schools and churches in Napier and Hastings, and played towns in the North Island for the rest of April. The following month, he began a tour of the South Island, and stayed playing in New Zealand until September, when he left for tours in Australia and Japan. All the proceeds of the tour Kenneth gave to charity work in Africa. After the tour, he returned to Europe and then back to his native USA. He settled in Chicago, where he continued to give shows at schools and private parties. At one of these, he was noticed by August Ditzinger, owner of the restaurant The Barn, who offered Kenneth a job playing in his establishment. For the next 25 years, The Barn was Kenneth's home. He was joined in music by many celebrities and singers, and people who would come to the restaurant just to hear him play. He retired in 1998 at the age of 87. The following year, he suffered a stroke and died in his Rosemont home. From a young boy who was taken by the organ, Kenneth delighted audiences the world over with his modesty, his smile, and his undeniable musical genius. As one commentator said after one of his shows, everything he touched, he made more beautiful. Right, and in keeping with our American theme, here's one of the most American songs that I know of, a classic one. Everybody knows this. I don't need to say who sings it or introduce it.
Start spreading the news, I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York, New York. City that never sleeps, and find I'm a number one, top of the list, king of the hill, a number one. These little town blues. Start of it in old New York, and if I can make it there, I'm gonna make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York.
Everybody knows that song for different reasons. The modern generation probably know it because it was in the Madagascar movie. I know it because it was in the Gremlins 2 movie. Check that out if you haven't seen it. There's nothing quite like hearing that sung by Gremlins. Anyway, next story. August 1925, vessels of the United States fleet visited New Zealand. This was not the first time that the American Navy had come to New Zealand, visiting Auckland in 1908. Fleet Street was named in honour of these special guests. In 1925, the fleet split into groups and steamed to Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch. Crew of the Wellington ships had the opportunity to visit Wairarapa. Wellington was host to the flagships USS Seattle and the battleships Pennsylvania, Oklahoma and Nevada, four light cruisers, a hospital ship and a repair ship. Initial opinions of New Zealand were mixed. One American sailor did himself no favours when he described Auckland as half the size of a New York cemetery and twice as dead. He then made himself a lot of friends by praising Sydney and all things Australian. In Christchurch, things got a bit further out of hand. An official order from the United States Navy said that all American naval personnel had to remain on their ships at night. The reason? There had been too many incidents of US naval men having fights with locals. One of the reasons for the Americans' visit was to help form a bond, and brawling in the street did not help that cause. Overall, the number of incidents were low, and most visitors were happy to be here. The sailors berthed in Wellington were scheduled to visit several places in New Zealand, and Masterton was included in the itinerary. When it was announced that the town would be among those places to be visited, the local councils set up an entertainment committee to oversee the festivities. On Thursday, August 13, a special train left Wellington at 8:55 a.m. On board were 250 men of the United States Navy. The Masterton Municipal Band arrived at the railway station 30 minutes ahead of the train's arrival to prepare. A notice in the Daily Times appealed to employers' good hearts to allow their staff who were in the band to leave early so they could welcome the naval men. Shops in town also agreed to collectively close between 12 and 2 to allow everyone a chance to see the Americans. At lunchtime, the train arrived in Masterton. As it pulled up to the station and the sailors disembarked, the municipal band played the Star Spangled Banner in welcome. From here, and led by the municipal band, the naval procession marched to the municipal hall. On the way, they passed the citizens of the area, many of whom had procured Old Glory and were waving it proudly. Marching into the hall, they sat down to a special lunch. All the while, the municipal band continued to play for them. The women's branch of the Navy League had arranged volunteers to serve the men, and each table was decorated with flowers and blossoms. Mayor Thomas Jordan then officially welcomed the men to Masterton. He joked that he had heard the Admiral of the Fleet state that the Americans believed New Zealand to be somewhere near the South Pole, and this is why they had taken so long to visit. America's part in the Great War was also acknowledged in his speech, and Jordan also stated that he thought America would stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the matter of keeping the peace. Several other speeches followed, as well as a Māori welcome. After lunch, there was a show of pictures in the Opera House. An invite was offered to anyone, but only after the sailors wanting to attend had been seated. In the St. Matthew's Parish Hall, a dance was organised with the orchestra. A sports game was also an option for the sailors. They could either watch a game of rugby between Wairarapa High School and the YMCA, or they could take part in an exhibition game of baseball. But unfortunately, the paper did not state which game the Americans chose or the outcome. At 4 p.m, the men returned to the municipal hall for dinner, the menu being in both English and Māori. After dinner, it was time to say goodbye, and the Americans were escorted to the train station. Locals waved their farewells as the train steamed away and disappeared down the tracks back to Wellington. This was not the last time the Wairarapa public would see naval boys. In the days following, special rail service set up runs leaving from Masterton, Carlton and Featherston to Wellington so people could travel to the capital and see the impressive fleet anchored there. During their stay here, the Americans made many friends and enjoyed their time here. The few that were initially critical of our country soon changed their tune after staying for a few days. Some of the officers were even able to return to Wairarapa for dances and activities. On August 25th, the fleet sailed for Honolulu. Before they left, Admiral Kuntz sent a telegram to Mayor Jordan. "My dear Mr. Mayor, before we resume our long voyage of return to the United States, I feel that I must write and thank you for the wonderful entertainment given our officers and men when they visited your city. On our former visit to New Zealand, it lasted only 9 days, and being anchored in Auckland, our people saw nothing of the country except the few who visited Rotorua. For that reason, we greatly appreciated what the committee who handled all matters did, and they provided the visit, such as that of some of our people to Masterton. To go outside of towns away from the city gives opportunities for knowing a country better. And when our people are entertained by people of the calibre of your citizens, it gives them an added idea of your dominion's possibilities." 16 years later, in December of 1941, the three battleships that had visited Wellington were anchored at Pearl Harbour. On the morning of the 7th, Japanese aircraft attacked the naval base. all three battleships were attacked along with several others. Pennsylvania was in dry dock at the time and escaped major damage, but Oklahoma was sunk and Nevada was forced to beach after being hit by one torpedo and six bombs. On those three ships, 489 men lost their lives. It was the beginning of the Pacific War, and America would stand shoulder to shoulder with New Zealand, and together they helped bring peace back to the region. Well, on that note, I'm going to play another piece of music. This one ties into somewhere I'm going. This is a brilliant song. I think it's one of the best songs on this particular movie. I have no interest. I think there's possibly going to be in the new one. I have no interest in seeing the remake. This is the good one. This is Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride from the Lilo and Stitch soundtrack.
Aloha, 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 aloha.
La la la, ita la ha na ha na. Heady heady, my tato.
Coaster Ride. I don't actually know who sings it. I just know it's on the Lilo and Stitch soundtrack. I probably should have done my research. Just bear with me one second while I fix this. No, hang on. I'm not having technical difficulties. I'm just changing something here. Okay. Last story for today. Again, keeping with our American thing. This one is a new one. I've never read this one on the radio before. It was on the paper only a few weeks ago. But if you haven't heard it, it could be of interest to you. In the 1960s, the space race was in full swing and interest was high. On May 5th, 1961, Alan Shepard became the first American in space, but wasn't the first human there. That honour went to Soviet Yuri Gagarin a few weeks earlier. The following year, John Glenn performed the first American orbits of Earth. Space exploration ambitions continued to expand, decidedly so under President Kennedy, who made his famous speech in which he declared America's interest in going to the moon and wanting to do it not because it is easy, but because it is hard. With a goal in mind, a new program would have to be created, which would be the Apollo. The previous space time capsule, Gemini, could only carry one astronaut. To go to the moon would require more crew, and Apollo could carry three. The public would need to be on board for this to work. And the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, made sure to keep the publicity up and maintain interest in space exploration. Aside from reality, there was also several television shows involving space exploration. Men into Space premiered in 1959, and by the mid-1960s, this was joined by Thunderbirds, which had its main headquarters, Thunderbird 5, as a space station orbiting Earth. Lost in Space took this further and allowed followed the Robinsons as they navigated the perils of being so far from home. With television shows, news features, and books on space exploration, kids in the 1960s became very interested in what lay beyond our atmosphere. The United States knew this and acted upon it, creating 30 sets of models of NASA spacecraft. These were sent around the world as part of the administration's education program. In March of 1965, it was our turn to learn all about the American space program and see the models of some of the craft that were going to propel the United States into space. The New Zealand Department of Education had taken on responsibility for the loan of the models, called Spacemobile. The collection of craft would travel around the country to high schools and colleges. Kurunui College got the chance to see it on March 8, when they could see models of Apollo, Surveyor, Ranger, Gemini, Echo, Nimbus, SynCom, and other launch vehicles and rockets. The Department of Education staff would have watched the kids like hawks, as Spacemobile had a value of £3,000 at the time, which is the equivalent of over $150,000 today. Mr. F. Lucarelli from NASA was also accompanying the models to help with explaining some of the details. But the responsibility of the models' well-being was entirely with the Department of Education. If Kiwi kids got handsy and broke anything, it was the New Zealand government that would have to foot the bill. The show was a great success, and after Kurunui, Spacemobile visited Wairarapa College before moving on to Tararua College. And all the tour of New Zealand would take 6 months. The Apollo model would in 4 years' time be on everyone's minds as it made the journey to our moon. Kids across New Zealand had a familiarity with the craft, having seen it in a model as it visited their school, at least those who paid attention in class. Well, there you have it. Yes, we'll play one more piece of music. This one is by special request. This is from the Pearl Harbor soundtrack. This is There You'll Be, sung by Faith Hill.
When I think back on these times and the dreams we left behind, I'll be glad, 'cause I was blessed to get to have you in my life. When I look back on these days, I'll look and see your face. You were right there for me. You.
And that was Faith Hill doing There You'll Be from the Pearl Harbor soundtrack. I'll be there in a couple of weeks, so it's going to be a very moving experience, I think. That is pretty much me, and like I said, that's me done for a while. I looked at the calendar, and I will be back for the 21st, but 21st is a holiday. I'm not going to come in on a holiday. I'll probably still be jet-lagged and everything. So we'll catch up with you on the 28th, which is good. 3 or 4 weeks away, so that's all right. I'm sure you'll be fine. But I'm not going to leave without telling you a joke. And of course, you know, now that we're rehashing some ones, and I'm going to tell one of my favorite ones. Why did the sesame seed, why could he not leave the casino? Is because he was on a roll. I mean, that's just genius, that joke, isn't it? Though I swear I won't do too much gambling overseas. I've saved up a long time for this. I'm not going to burn it away in a casino. So look after yourselves in the time I am away. Don't miss me too much. And we will catch up with you on the 28th of April, probably with a few stories to tell, new ones and old ones. Look after yourselves, and we will see you in a few weeks. See you then.